What's happening, Tiki and Tierney? Ready to go. We are ready to go this Wednesday, coming from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Got a lot to do today. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. So, hope everybody's having a great day. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney, Instagram as well, same deal, YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney. The Nets and the Sixers tonight will do some hoops. Ben Simmons said he was dishing on a lot of different topics. One was the Nets. One was the Defensive Player of the Year Award. He incorporated Rudy Gobert's name. Get your name out of my mouth. He was throwing some smackdown. Ben Simmons had some really interesting things to say. And as for the game tonight, it is what it is, but Kevin Durant's not going to play. We're not going to have James Harden. Kyrie Irving is active, but we don't know if he'll play. We're still waiting word on that. So that'll be a little bit fun in the NBA. We'll get that a little bit later. Obviously, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. We've got some football issues, Teak, that I'm going to let you take the reins here in terms of the NFL players kicking back strongly on boycotting. At least five teams so far have sent a letter saying, listen, we're not doing these voluntary workouts in person. In essence, the thumbnail sketch is that the NFL, the league, the Players Association is striving to have another year virtually, where the NFL, to their credit, they acquiesced a bit. They basically said, well, you know, kind of meet us halfway. We'll do the first 2 weeks as a virtual, and then we'll get back to business as we know it. And that is when the five teams, the Bucks is one, or the Bucks, Pats, a few others, I think Seattle, the Lions, another team in there, basically said not good enough for us. So I don't think it's a great look. I'm sure you have a bunch of different takes because you live this, so let me step out of the way. What does all this mean?
It's not necessarily that it's a bad look. I think it's J.C. Tretter, who is the president from the Players Association, from the player standpoint, realizing that last year they went through the entire offseason. It was all virtual. We all remember how odd it was. There was no in-person OTAs or even a mini camp, and even training camp was modified. Remember, it was like the first 2 weeks. It was just an acclimation period so that the guys could like work out, get strong again, make sure their bodies felt all right before they started playing football. And actually, honestly, BT, it's like old school NFL. It's like, all right, go have your summer job, or not even summer because it's whatever, your off-season job, and then come back and you work yourself into shape to get ready for the season. And the reason the players love it is because there's no like unnecessary wear and tear on their body. There's no, you know, mini camp or competitive 3-day mandatory camp where somebody gets hurt and you're lost for the season. Mm-hmm. And the guys appreciated that. The stated reason why they don't want to do this is because of the COVID protocols that are currently in place or weren't in place until the NFL said, we're going to do exactly what we did last year, which is test pretty consistently and make sure that nobody is passing the coronavirus around like it was at the height at the beginning of March last year. And so I understand where the players are coming from. They're positioning this as a COVID thing, a COVID precautionary situation. Yep. But really, they want to get rid of the offseason. And honestly, I don't mind it. Dan Campbell said something that was interesting. This is the only thing that I worry about, but I have a mitigation for it.
Okay.
Dan Campbell basically said, he played too, so he knows, and he's not that far removed from being in the locker room, similar to me, even though he played a little bit longer than I did. Mm-hmm. He knows that guys hate the offseason. They hate coming around. They hate going these especially the veterans, these ridiculous drills and the mini camps and all these things you can learn virtually. But what he said was, I worry about the strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. And in that side, I understand where he's coming from. It's one thing to trust the guy to work out on his own. It's another to know if he's actually doing it. And that's what you're going to miss.
Yeah, of course.
That's what you miss if this turns into we're going to have no off season, show up for a 3-day mini camp, and then go and see you at training camp. Like, you don't know if guys are going to work out. Some will because they're vain. They want to look great, and they feel like they want to perfect their craft. Others will just chill, sit on the couch, maybe go run for a mile or so a day. And that's a real worry, because that's when injuries actually get worse, I believe.
Yeah, I also think there's more to it than just that. It's not just worrying about guys not working out, but it's also about maybe worried about guys not working out properly.
Yes.
Under the eye of the training staff, which, right. Is, even though they're pro athletes, there's still a routine to follow. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Now, again, are they? I don't want to use the word hiding. Are they? Mm-hmm. Are they shielding themselves a little bit from doing something they don't want to do by leaning on the pandemic? Yeah, a little bit. Yes. Of course, that's obvious. So
no doubt.
It's part of the. It's on the chessboard. They've elected to grab it, which I understand. And we'll see how far it takes us. But what I don't. If this morphs into a consistent thing moving forward. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be to such a detriment to the league where, you know, coaches are rookie coaches. I don't mean if if you're the Tampa Bay Bucks, you got everybody coming back. If you're Andy Reid and Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, you're fine. You know, even though Shanahan's got some new players out there in San Francisco, they've had the same system for a while. But, you know, if you're one of these teams with a rookie head coach or a team that remade yourself via free agency. We saw a few teams mm-hmm. do that. If you're a team like the Jaguars, who not only have a new coach, but also a new quarterback, same with the Jets, a new coach and a new quarterback, and not only even take a situation like Carolina where, all right, well, you've got Matt Rhule. He's had a year to implement it. But all of a sudden, now you're dumping Sam Darnold into the middle of a playbook, and Sam's a smart kid. Conceptually, he could get it.
Yeah.
But he's got to be on the football field, man. So I understand the players' reticence to want to do this. But from my point of view, which I think reflects the greater mindset of the fans, I don't think fans look
yeah,
at
that. Why do fans care, though?
Well, because I think that they worry that it's going to impact the product, which is what I'm saying. I don't think that they care that the players aren't walking into the building physically.
Yeah.
My concern, and I think that they echo this, is that they fear that there will be an erosion of play, a sloppiness that creeps in, and I think the same thing.
Well, let's face it. There is a sloppy play regardless at the beginning of seasons. We've seen this for the last half a decade or so. It's like, dude, what's wrong with this team? Or what's, this guy got hurt or this guy is injured. Like, we've seen this over the last 5 years.
But this will compound the teak. We're going from playing no preseason games, the starters,
to
now a truncated offseason?
Yeah, but I feel like they're fresher this way. And
they're fresher, they don't look fresh in September. They look terrible.
Here's the thing. I'm trying to think, and this is the mitigation that I was talking about. I'm trying to think, like, how would I have addressed this if this had come up when I was playing? And the reason I would be okay with not working out with the team and having, I don't know, all this supervision is because my workouts with the team, I was just there to be there. My workout actually happened with my personal trainer. And I think we've started to see this a little bit more and more and more from players around the league. They're hiring their own personal trainers who, I know you mentioned, are they working out correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you have a guy who knows what he's doing working you out, it's working out correctly. I mean, Joe Caridi was great for me. I mean, I love doing, the stuff with the guys at the facility because you get to interact with them.
Sure.
You
chemistry.
You hang out. You learn about, I don't know. It's just different. And it's necessary. But from a workout standpoint, I got more value from having Joe Carini pound on me and make me, injury proof in his little hovel up in Montville.
His little hell pit.
His little hell pit. I love that.
Yeah, I know you do.
But I enjoyed having the camaraderie. So the only thing I would say you're missing, forget the working out, because you can mitigate that, is the chemistry that develops and the, man, I got to know a little bit about this guy to push his button the right way. You know what I mean? So whether it's Sean O'Hara or David Deal, just a couple of linemen that I'm in that were integral to my development and success as a player. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't spent off seasons hanging out with them, hey, man, you mind if I do this when I'm running or do that when I'm running? Or if I hadn't had those conversations, I don't think we would have been nearly as successful. And it's really hard to smash that into a training camp which suck. You know what I mean? Because you're away. And it's exhausting. Training camp is exhausting. The off season is a relaxed environment for these guys to get to know each other, which I think is important.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll take you again with Carini doing your thing. I mean, you were, as a player and are as a broadcast professional, you're a self-motivated guy.
Yes.
And you're a smart guy. So nobody's worrying about Tiki when he leaves the facility. He's not going to get in trouble. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not worried about Tiki when he leaves the broadcast building either. We're not worried about Tiki putting the time in because Tiki's a locked-in, diligent, smart, professional athlete, and now the same applies as a broadcaster. But not everybody's like you. Not everybody's like you.
True.
And you know, and you need a little structure and a little bit of order,
necessary?
I think.
Isn't that necessary? I mean, at this point, you've made it to the NFL. Shouldn't you be a pro?
Like, well, you should be.
I understand, like, for some of these young guys. Because these young guys come in, they have no idea. They think they've got to figure it out. I was a star at wherever, Ohio State, Florida State, whatever, USC. I was a star. Mm-hmm. I know how this works. No, you don't. You have no idea. It's why I always say this facetiously, but I hated rookies. Because they just didn't get it, right? They didn't understand the urgency that was necessary. So I could espouse, like, first, second, maybe even third year guys having to be around to work out and put in the necessary work in order to be successful. But once you hit a certain age or experience in the league,
yep,
it really becomes a grind. Like
tedious and unnecessary.
Exactly right.
I can see that.
And especially because it's so easy. Like, what did we learn? We can communicate via digital medium, right? I think it was so easy, and sometimes more complimentary to study via the iPad. Now, it's different, obviously, than stepping on the field, but at least you have, like, ways to interact with these guys and get them to learn the playbook. That's the other side that we're not talking about a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that's easier when you have the digital tools in order to accomplish it.
Here's my other concern, though. And again, I get it. I mean, if I was a four-year vet or a five-year vet, I'd be trying to weasel out of the store. I wouldn't waste my time with that. I get it. But
I'm going to work out in Cabo or something. Where was Zeke?
Zeke went down. Well, Tony Romo went down there, too.
True.
Right? And then obviously Zeke went down there.
Maybe they have a connection.
Proximity. Think about relation to Mexico.
I wonder if they were the same place, though.
Who knows? I'm sure they get deals
everywhere.
I'm sure Jerry's hooking them up a little bit. So I want to go back to something that you said, and obviously we've talked about this now the last couple of years. We have now seen more and more. It's more apparent by the year that the sloppiness has seeped into the regular season. And, you know, we've gotten further and further away from players playing any meaningful snaps during the summer. Again, I'm okay with it. You want to preserve the body for 16, now 17 games. That's what you get paid for. That's where you make your money. That's what matters. Understood.
Yep.
But it seems like now we're just – it's like going from 70 miles per hour in the jugs machine and suddenly you crank it up to 100. Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
If we're going to modify the way players get prepared for the season, which I'm all for, based on the intel that we gained from technology during this hellish pandemic year, there's no doubt there's new protocols can be inserted. I think too much at once. I don't know if you have guys going from not playing any games to now not even being in the building during the OTA. Like, that is a lot of absence from the game of football.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, probably too much too soon.
Maybe.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and you're probably right, BT, but these guys saw and felt it in real time last year, and the season went off. It was mostly successful. There weren't a ton of, I mean, there were some major injuries, but that happens every year. But you know, I mean, it wasn't this catastrophic falling by the wayside of all the stars because they didn't have any off season. You know what I mean? So I think that the players, especially the veterans who have been around and have gone through the attrition, right? The part, the weeding out part, and they know how to manage it. They're ready to preserve their bodies more because they want to play longer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, only place we're really seeing that is with quarterbacks. I mean, quarterbacks are playing forever these days. All these other guys, it's a lot harder to get that length in their careers. And if they can shorten the offseason and give themselves a little bit more of a tick on that health meter, then they're willing to do it. And it's hard to fault them.
It is hard to fault that. Only thing is, I don't think that's accurate. Are you telling me that players actually wear down or cut short? Because they're not banging helmets the way
you
used to.
It's not about banging. It's about
attrition comes from Sundays.
No, not really.
Really?
It comes from being on the field and doing, I don't know, like drills and 7-on-7, and you know, I gotta make this cut 16 times, and it's wear and tear, and it's fatiguing. Like, I remember some of those spring at the time, spring workouts, you'd come off the field and you're just like, you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Dad, we didn't even hit. We didn't even play. You're just exhausted. And now if you can just take that little bit of wear, it's maybe minuscule relative to what happens on a Sunday afternoon in the fall, yeah. but it is some wear and tear. If you can take that grind away a little bit, I think it just makes you feel better come the fall. I don't know. I mean, I think it gives times for guys to fully recover and then build themselves up as they feel like they need to be built up. Now, again, this isn't for everybody because some young players and those that are non-motivated, they're not going to do it correctly and yep. they may get hurt. But honestly, BT, to me, that's okay. If you're not willing to commit, then you don't deserve to be in the league, period.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm going back to a few things here. I don't doubt at all. I'm not even remotely challenging the mm-hmm. the concept that if these are scaled back and virtual is okay, then you will get, you know, theoretically a fresher, more prepared player to start the season.
More eager player too.
More eager. Maybe prepared is the wrong word. More yeah. eager. But I still don't know that correlates to a sharpness on game day. I think it goes the other way.
That's a good question.
That's my fear. It's sloppiness. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, the symbolism of swiping the front door at the facility. All right. Is the Tiki show up yet? All right. Where's Shockey? Where's Jacobs? No. I mean, this isn't third grade roll call.
By the way, that's Boy crazy. Scouts. That's crazy they do that now. I never had to. The door was just open, man. You just walked in.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
crazy. You got to swipe to get in these facilities these days.
Well, listen, with the player movement, you never know when you're going to get locked out. Things change quick.
It's a good point.
You know, guys changing teams. And speaking of maybe not changing teams, but changing directions. There are rumblings now that the Pats are plotting a monster move up the draft board with their target, one guy. Who is the guy? And would it make sense to make that leap? Tiki and I hit that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, Instagram as well. So, Tiki, I know we'll do a lot on Ben Simmons' comments. He was dishing out a few topics. The Nets, number one. Rudy Gobert, his defensive prowess. We'll get to that a little bit later. But the more I think about this, and I was looking at it during the break, you know, got this marquee matchup tonight. You know, every year, and I've said this since you and I have been together, I've said it before you and I even started working together 9 years ago, there's probably, depending upon the year, but generally in the range of 10 to 12 NBA games that you have to watch each year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, devout fans are going to watch a lot more than that, but if you really want to get a sense of, you know, storylines that are shaping and maybe kind of a foreshadow for the rest of the season, 10, 9, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. Tonight, on paper, is one of those games. Identical records, playing for the top seed in the East. Well, we know Harden's out.
Yep.
Kevin Durant's not playing. All right? And he's not hurt, just a rest night.
Yep.
All right, Durant's not playing. Aldridge isn't playing. Blake Griffin's not playing. The game's an ESPN game. It's a national game. All right, starts at 7. And those four guys aren't playing. Kyrie, as I said before, is active, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to play. What a horrible look for the league.
Yeah, this is horrible. This is one of the things that we were talking about with maintenance days and the uncertainty about who's going to line up when the NBA needs them to. And, I mean, I get it, especially because some of these players that we're talking about have either had injuries or they're just working their ways back in. But this is one of those games, BT, that I want to watch.
Yep.
But now I'm going to be watching and hoping Joe Harris scores 40. You know what I mean? Seriously.
Yeah.
And maybe he does because he's that prolific of a shooter. But, you know, without those other factors around him allowing him to have space, I mean, who knows if that's going to actually transpire. This game could be ugly.
And not in a good way. I'll tell you what, if Kyrie doesn't play, there's no reason to watch at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not.
Because only if the Nets keep it close and you hear about it, you're like, okay, let me tune into that game to see how they're doing this. But otherwise, what are you learning?
Like, yeah.
Right? You're not seeing a preview of potentially the Eastern Conference Finals.
For sure. And another thing that's bothered me is that, you know, I've seen a lot on social media. Well, you know, smart, savvy move by Steve Nash not to show too many cards and play his guys. First of all, that's a loser mentality. I'm not saying that Steve is I mean, listen, I'm sure it's more team mandate than just I'm not throwing this at Steve Nash's door. I'm not calling him a loser, obviously, but that is a loser mindset. And I also think it's a faulty one, because I really think that, and while a lot of people would say, well, it makes a little sense to conceal maybe matchup advantages, so when you do play them in the playoffs, they don't, you know, I look at it the other way. I want to get all my guys on the court, and I want to play against their guys, and I want to see what works and what doesn't, rather than guessing. And then I can react to what does work, and then maybe more specifically, what does not work, I can tweak.
Yeah, you want to be able to build some confidence in that, in this opponent, and right over the scheme that we're going to have against this opponent.
Yep, or something tangible.
Exactly, or the matchups that we're going to have against this team.
Weak.
I want to
Weak.
See it, and we're not going to see it.
Weak sauce. All right, so, Deke, there's a lot of rumblings now. Maybe smoke screens. Always have to insert that. We know it's that time where people are planting stuff and trying to throw you off scent, and you know, players are getting, you know, banged around. Oh, the work ethic's not there. Oh, he's not that smart. Oh, that hamstring's bit. Oh, the shoulder. We've seen this every year. So you have to be smart enough to know what to funnel in and actually maybe process, and then just to say whatever, that's nonsense. I don't know where I fall on this particular not rumor, but movement that's beginning to grow. With you know, a lot of pundits, they do this for a living. Yeah, they want their mocks to get clicked. I understand that. But a lot of people with some substance are now forecasting the Pats as an aggressive player to move up from 15, okay, to make a move to get Justin Fields from Ohio State, which I think would be brilliant. He's better than Mac Jones. I don't think he's better than Zach Wilson, but you know I love Zach.
Yeah.
But I know he's better than Mac Jones, or at least I think he is. First of all, two things here. Number one, from 15 to wherever it would take that neighborhood, would it be worth the Pats, based on the pros and cons of Fields, to jump the requisite six spots, maybe seven?
I mean,
to get
Fields,
Justin Fields? What do you think?
Don't you think they got to go like 10? You know what I mean? Don't you think Justin Fields is...
Depends with it depends what the Falcons do. If the Falcons stay at four, I don't think they're taking a quarterback.
We see a little bit differently.
Yeah,
so
we do.
I'm looking, because I think the Falcons are going to take a quarterback, because even if they sit the guy for 2 years and let him grow, and especially if it's a guy like Justin Fields, who at least according to anonymous sources doesn't have the work ethic and is a one-read guy, which is all nonsense,
and
by
totally
the way.
Shot down and unfair to the young man.
It's ridiculously unfair. It absolutely is.
Yep.
And look, this
kid put on 25 pounds in 1 year. Exactly. He's in the gym busting his behind.
We talked about this before, but we know this happens because some team wants him to fall and whatever. But it's just unfair to malign a kid like that when it's nowhere near true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the New England Patriots draft picks right now. They have 3 fourth-round picks, BT, and 2 sixth-round picks. But everything else is basically the same. Number one, 15. First round, they're 15. The second round, they're 46. Third round, they're 96. So there's nothing like really, I don't know, like impressive to trade, right?
Yeah.
Unless you go forward and say, all right, we'll go the 2022 pick as well.
Which you could,
but the Pats just don't do that, right? They don't really hamstring themselves in the draft.
No, they're the ones who get the assets.
Yes, exactly right. But remember the conversation we had, I don't know, when was it, 2 weeks ago, how poorly the Pats have been drafting?
Especially at the wide receiver spot.
It might be worth it for the New England Patriots, if something they just don't historically do, to move a 2022 pick, maybe even multiple 2022 picks, to move from 15 all the way up to wherever they need to get to get Justin Fields.
I agree.
Normally, I wouldn't say that, but we know that he's going to be a little bit of a project, which they can mitigate with, you know, Cam Newton or whoever the heck it is, for a year, give Justin Fields a chance to learn that system. When Cam gets banged up or banged around, you get him some playing time. It actually sounds plausible, but the only way they're going to do it, the Pats, is if they break with what they've always done with their draft picks, which is hoard them and use them as leverage come draft day. They're going to have to get rid of something in 2022, which is something I'm not sure they're used to doing. But it might be time to do so, though.
That's what I was saying. We're not used to seeing them do that because they don't do that, but they've never had to do that because they've never had such a gaping hole at the most important position in football.
They've had Tom Brady
for 20 years, so you don't have to move mountains with terms of draft equity and get reckless and get cavalier if you know that the most important important spot in sports, not just football, is solidified by a guy who's healthy, a guy who's a productive player, mm-hmm. and a guy who, you know, is all in and no drama. Oh, my God, yeah. I also think that, not that this always matters, but I think sometimes it does, like, you, I don't know that you want a quarterback room to. Think about the Ravens a couple of years ago when you had Joe Flacco, mm-hmm. who throws a good deep ball, no yeah. doubt, still throws a good deep ball, but is as slow as molasses, man. He is nailed to the ground. He can't. He's got concrete. He don't wear spikes. He wears concrete cinder blocks on his feet, right? He just can't move. No. So to have that and then the complete antithesis in Lamar Jackson, like, just schematic-wise, it's not a real mesh. If you bring Justin – now, Justin Fields is a better thrower of the ball than Cam Newton, especially
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
But there's enough traits that cross over where it wouldn't be two radically different approaches, even if Justin's sitting for a little bit, and I would imagine he would, while Cam is trying to prove and resurrect his career and prove that COVID, you know, really sidetracked, which was a decent start, to be mm-hmm. fair. Teague, I think this would be brilliant. I said the other day, for those who missed this, I am so tired of this Mac Jones propaganda. Like, when the season started, September, whatever, there was, if you told me Mac Jones was getting drafted in the third round, I'd say, that seems a little early.
Yeah,
I was thinking more fourth round.
Yeah, but hold on. Don't forget, Mac Jones did not play a ton at all at Alabama until Tua got hurt. He sat behind Jalen Hurts. He sat behind Tua. Tua gets hurt his last season. We all saw that. Remember this. And then Mac Jones has to play. He played pretty well in those games. The only one where he had a little bit of a faltering was against Auburn, where he threw two interceptions. He mm-hmm. also threw for like 340 yards. They ended up losing that game, though, because he turned the football over. From that moment on, Mac Jones has been exceptional. Not dissimilar to Joe Burrow. If you would ask us last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, going into last year's season, Joe Burrow, well, you know,
he was a projected fifth-round pick.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I get you on that.
He had a spectacular season. Mac Jones had almost as good of a season.
No, he may have had even in some levels better. I get that. But the difference to me is that actually his preseason draft grade was round six, not even round five, yeah, Joe Burrow true. Going back a couple years ago. The difference to me is that, you know, watching Joe Burrow, maybe not the previous year when the touchdown to pick ratio was relatively, you know, mm-hmm. pedestrian.
Yeah.
But watching him the next year, there were so many dynamic plays. I know that guys are open. He's playing mm-hmm. with pros. Brady's incredibly smart. I get all that.
Yeah.
But I watch Mac, and I'm not trying to relegate Mac Jones to scrub status, but really, and he made some big-time throws this year, but I never really watch Mac Jones and say, man, that guy's dynamic. I got to take him three. I got to scoot up and get him four. No way. Yeah. Justin Fields, even with the poor play against a great Indiana defense, even with the poor play in the Big Ten Championship, which my partner was there calling mm-hmm. in Indianapolis, even those two stink bombs aside in yeah. just a 6-7-game season, because they missed a bunch, I still, and the previous year, by the way, I have seen so many dynamic qualities
yeah.
from Justin Fields. That's a move that I'm making. Mac yeah. Jones, I can't justify taking Mac Jones
at three. It makes you look at the ceiling as opposed to the actualities that we've seen on game day, you know, on Saturday.
For sure, Teague.
Yeah, and by the way, that Mac Jones game against Indiana, it was bad because he threw some really stupid interceptions. He had three on the game. Two of them were just egregiously bad. It was like the first time he was tested all season long. Remember, they had they played three games, whatever it was, and they had a canceled game, and they played a game, they had another canceled game, then they played Indiana. Indiana was good, by the way.
Very good.
Defensively.
Yes.
And he just was not prepared.
No,
like,
it wasn't.
The inconsistency of the season is an excuse for why he played so poorly. And I'm only saying poorly because that's what people say about that game. He actually uh-huh. threw for 300 yards and ran for 78 and a touchdown, right? They won the game in part because of him. Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect, man. Sometimes you're going to have bad days, especially against good defenses.
That's true.
The Northwestern game, that one was inexcusable.
That was an ugly one.
that was an inexcusable one. And makes you question some of the things you have. But the maligning that we've seen of Justin Fields is, first of all, character and work ethic mm-hmm. and ability to play the game, that's just been uncalled for. And I don't think like GMs who have their eye on him, I don't think they're moved by that in a negative way.
Listen, I'm just not getting excited. All I keep hearing, again, I know he's accurate, blah, blah, blah. Oh, he's such a good fit for Shanahan's system. That's like, I got married later in life. I got married in my 30s, right? Because I knew I wasn't ready for it. I didn't want it up until that point. And quite frankly, I hadn't met anybody where I fell that deeply in love where I knew I was getting on my knee to put a ring on her finger. I met Jen, it changed immediately. But before I met my wife, right, that would be, to me, akin to somebody saying, well, you know, you're going to marry somebody, and she's going to be a good mom, which is vital. Yeah. I'm not marginalizing that at all. But, you know, you guys will get along a little. She'll be stable, and, you know, it'll be all right. that's like marrying Mac Jones. Mm. Whereas, now, Justin Fields, a little different. The motor gets revved up a little differently.
You know my philosophy.
And I'm not just talking about from a physical point of view.
Yeah.
I just think there's more that he's bringing to the marriage.
Yeah. The you know my philosophy. If the kid's not going to be a Hall of Famer at quarterback.
Oh,
yeah. Positions don't matter. If you're not going to be a Hall of Famer at quarterback, you can't draft him in the top 10.
Not top 10.
It's just not worth it.
Teague's been saying that for a long time. Little late, all good. Update from Ack, and then we'll get to Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Ack, right now. All right. Teague and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Going to get to Inbounds, Out of Bounds in a moment. A lot of stuff happening today. If you've heard anything that moves you, hit us up on Twitter, Teague and Tierney. Right now, though, it's time to ask the pros, where we give you a chance to ask us anything you want. Brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Pretty easy. Just drop us a tweet, and you can send that tweet to CBS Sports Radio, at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag Ask the Pros. Stick around. Listen later on. We will draw the best one, the most compelling one, so make us think. And we'll handle it on the air before we end the show. Teague and I will give you some props, too. So send them in, and we'll see what you come up with. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. All right, so it's funny. We, without boring you, I had an issue. Our Slack chain, I got booted off, and then I had to come back, whatever. So basically, we had the stream that we always have, but I wasn't a part of it because I got booted, and then I called Santhor. Santhor helped me get in, and we wound up kind of starting a new Slack chain. Again, blah, blah, blah. But Teague had sent something that I didn't see, and I sent something that he didn't see because I sent it on the new chain. He sent it on the old one that I was now locked out of, right?
At the same time.
At the same time. And it's about a radical, radical proposition for baseball that at first sounds crazy, but might be awesome. So we'll get to that a little later. But right now it's time for Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Teague, you ready to go?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's hit it.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now. Teague and Tierney.
All right. As we discussed, Julian Edelman retired on Monday, although there is a little speculation that he maybe not fully retired, even though he did fail the physical. You know, Gronk is saying 69% chance you're going to go with the Bucks. Gronk, oh my God. Anyway, a little debate, some of it heated, around his Hall of Fame credentials and candidacy. In an interview with Yahoo Sports, The Rush, LeSean McCoy, Shady, discussed that candidacy as well as his own.
Julian Edelman has just retired after having a great career and basically buzzing whether or not he's a Hall of Famer.
But it's Hall of Famer?
Hall of Famer, because it's postseason.
Nah, come on, man.
Like, just talk about your resume, man. You're a two-time All-Pro, two-time Super Bowl champ, 6 1,000-yard seasons, and 89 total touchdowns.
I think I got a good shot at it. I put my numbers up with any other running backs. You know, my decade, I was the lead dog. I think I got good numbers from touchdowns to yards. You name it, yards per carry, and you add on 2 Super Bowls with it.
All right, so Shady's got 11,000 rushing yards, nearly 4,000 receiving yards, 12 years in the NFL, led the league in rushing once, and he won the last 2 Super Bowls, Kansas City and Tampa. And by the way, that's like almost a player-on-player crime. To be that definitive about a contemporary's Hall of Fame candidacy?
Yeah,
that's kind of cold, man. He just flat-out said, nah, man, Edelman Hall of Fame? Nah, man, nah. Don't waste my time on that. Wow,
right.
Okay.
What about me?
Yeah, exactly. What are we getting to me? LeSean McCoy, here we get to him now, is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, in or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds. I think those Super Bowls are interesting.
Yep.
Because he didn't play in one at all. I don't think he dressed for another one either. So they're on the resume. But
yeah, they're decorative pieces that he didn't put on the Christmas tree.
Exactly right. But look, he was one of the greats in it for about 4 or 5 years. I think he's a fantastic player. He should be in somebody's ring of honor, maybe the Eagles, but he never stuck with a team. And it gets harder to find a guy when you bounce around and have like sub-elite numbers at each of those places. They're great collectively, but I'm going to say out of bounds.
I guess I'm a little more lenient with this stuff because I'm one of those who said that Edelman's a Hall of Famer based on his postseason prowess, certainly far more than his regular season numbers. I get that, but I'm going to say inbounds. You know, I'm not going to run to the top of the mountain and beat my chest and scream that Shady's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And quite frankly, I don't even know that I'd really do that with Edelman. It just came up because he retired, and I was obviously weighing in. Different careers where, like, if Edelman had McCoy's regular season impact, he's a no-doubter when you mix in his postseason stuff, and vice versa. If Shady had Edelman's postseason prowess, he, too, is a no-doubter. But for a couple of years, McCoy was absolutely one of the best in the game. The numbers are there enough for me. I don't penalize him. The transient nature, going to the Bills, bouncing around, whatever. I'm okay with that. I mean, hey, Frank Gore's getting in. Frank Gore's played on, I think, 18. I know his numbers are bad. I get
it. He's the third all-time leading rusher.
I understand that. But I would say that he is, and I would think that more people would agree with that than my Edelman position. I think eventually they both get in.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teak. The Clippers, the Clip Show, pretty hot. They've won 6 straight, 12 of their past 14, sit firmly in third in the Western Conference, right? Paul George has been rolling himself, averaging over 34 in his last 4 while shooting 60%. He's flaming right now from downtown despite an injured toe. So after last night's win, PG-13 admitted he had to change his mindset about the injured toe.
Yeah, the injury allowed me to kind of make an excuse for myself. But then when I put it in perspective, if I'm a play, then why not just, you know, give it my all and, you know, put that to the side. So that was the mindset I came in with, you know, just to play through it. And if I'm going to play, then, you know, don't let it limit me. You know, again, it's just been paying off. I feel like I've had a breakthrough because of that mindset.
It took you 9 years to come up with that mindset?
No, what the hell?
I'm not saying he hasn't been good, but that's kind of late in your career to discover that mindset. George's new mindset and hot play does make us more confident that he can break out of his postseason slump this season.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he's not waffling with that confidence. So I'm going to say inbounds, BT. Just kind of odd. Look, and maybe it's in my football mentality. It's a little bit different than basketball players. If you're aching just a little bit, you sit down in basketball. It's just nonsense because in the NFL, you have to play every day. Otherwise, you don't get you get replaced and you don't get paid. And so I think some of this is a product of the logistical structure of contracts in the NBA. But I'm glad that he's embracing this because this is the embrace of LeBron James. This is the embrace of Kobe and MJ. Didn't matter how much money they were making. They were doing it to be great and damn the pain. It's just weakness leaving your body, right? And so, Paul George, I'm glad you finally saw the light on what it takes to be great. It's not by chilling just because you're aching a little bit.
I like it. Tiki throwing some flames as well. I agree with you. I'm going to say inbounds because I don't really know what's in his mind, even though I know what just came out of his mouth. I don't know if, 1-3-for-14 playoff game rattles it to the point where what we just heard becomes a distant thing of the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, confidence is very fleeting, as we know, in all walks of life, not just pertaining to pro athletes. I think that I always give the benefit of the doubt to talent, especially when that talent is surrounded by other really good talent, like he is with Kawhi Leonard and some other players, too. So I'm going to say inbounds. I've always liked Paul George as a player. He's baffled me the last couple of years. And if it doesn't happen now, then don't ever waste my time on Paul George again because then it's never going to happen.
Yep.
I'll give him one more shot because I've been a fan for a long time. I'll say inbounds.
Are you in or are you out?
Steven Strasburg, he's dealt with injuries really his entire career, Teak, as we know. And while he's shown flashes of brilliance, he hasn't quite lived up to the expectations since going number one all the way back in 2009. I was watching him pitch at San Diego State. ESPN was piping in games when he was in college playing for Tony Gwynn. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how much and how long he's been on our radar. So during the Nationals game with the Cardinals yesterday, cameras caught Strasburg wincing in pain and rubbing his throwing shoulder while sitting in the tunnel, and he wasn't happy about it.
I think it's a joke, to be honest, that they shoot it in the tunnel, because there's got to be some sort of safe place in the stadium. There should be some sort of privacy. People don't watch the games on TV to watch, you know, some sort of spy camera watching what the player's doing in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, he's ticked, and probably rightfully so. In or out, the tunnel should be off limits for cameras and media during games.
I'm going to say out of bounds of that.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
If you really are hurting that much, go into the locker room, see the trainer. Take yourself out of the game. I mean, if you're still good enough to go, then that's just part of the, I don't know, the struggle. It's part of the grind. It's part of what makes it so compelling when you come out and succeed still, in spite of that pain that you're pointing. It makes a heroic moment. Now, if it's a competitive disadvantage, maybe, you know, I can see some problems with it, but I don't see how that's a competitive disadvantage. I'm going to say out of bounds.
I don't know that it's a competitive disadvantage. I just think it's an invasion of unnecessary invasion of privacy. I get it. Like, when a guy fouls a ball off his foot, mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, shatters something, you know, he's writhing in pain, cameras fixated on him for sometimes 2 minutes, they'll go to commercial break because it's getting awkward. They'll come back. He's still there. That, you know, that's when you keep that camera panned on the player. That's in the eyes of everybody. But to me, there's got to be some sort of safe haven. And I know what you're saying, that you can go back to the clubhouse. But, you know, sometimes, you know, if there's two outs or the time is of it, you know, you might not have – it's just – I don't know. I don't know what the benefit is. To me, it's not that you're stripping away an advantage or you're giving the opposition an unfair advantage. To me, you just I'm going to say it's a deeply personal moment. I don't want to stretch it out too much. But, you know, he went there for a reason. Otherwise, he would have sat in the dugout and he would have done this to his shoulder. He's probably alarmed. He's probably scared. He's had a ton of surgeries. He didn't want people to see it, and I totally agree. There is no good that can come out of seeing a guy bust a bat where you're not supposed to have cameras, or smash a helmet, or rub his shoulder. Unnecessary. Deshaun Watson, a legal expert, next.